discussions, chat, and a good time. FC Halifax are going to be our team of the week this
week.
Team
of the week.
On the brand new semi-pro football podcast. Welcome, listeners. It is me, Gareth Lewis, and who have we else got?
It's him, Gareth Lewis, and it's me, Chris FM.
Chris FM. And we're going to start off by introducing the podcast. And we are going to be basically doing a weekly podcast with a team of the week as our main team. And it's going to be sort of a fact file, I guess you could call it, of the team of the week. We might have a little drink section and maybe a random story that we've just found. Maybe it might even be like 10 years old, the story. It might be 20 years old. Just something interesting about any other club, any other business. And then, we'll pick the new team of the week after that.
Absolutely. So we're looking forward to finding out more about all the different non-league football teams. So we're going to focus on a different one each week. And as Gareth's already said, FC Halifax Town are our first team of the week. We're very excited to be discussing them.
We will. But our first section...
Oh, it's always.
It's going to be our drink section.
Yeah.
We always like to have a little drink when we record different things, pieces.
We're drinking this out of our Cricket World Cup.
Yeah.
In honour of England's magnificent victory over the summer, and I went to the first game of the Cricket World Cup, England against South Africa, at the Kia Oval. My favourite moment of it was that it was the opening, first game, so it was the opening ceremony, and so there was a big fanfare, there was all these massive cricket balls with all the flags on it, and there was an acrobat, and it was all very impressive. All these people went around the pitches, and they were all banging these drums, but they weren't actually banging the drum, the head drums, but they weren't banging them. It was like air drumming. And so we're thinking that's going to be weird. They're going to start playing in a minute and it's going to get really like, you know,
and they didn't.
It's going to get heavy. And so then this sort of music was going on. They just walked off and they didn't hit a note in anger at all.
They did well.
They did very well. So that's my favourite Cricket World Cup. But mine's a gin and tonic. Pink gin and tonic.
Mine is a run out mug. It's run out.
Alin Dar out.
It's the backwards B-I-R-A.
Yeah.
For some reason, is the beer partner. I don't know why you'd
want
that.
Yeah, we only had to drink white beer up there. Wheat beer.
Oh, the wheat beer.
Wheat beer, which is a bit strong.
I have a Heineken, but there are some craft beers in the fridge.
Oh, we'll maybe get to them at some point.
So my general story for this week's podcast is going to be, well, I'll give you the title of it.
Yes.
It's called Craptastic Non-League Mascot of the Day.
Craptastic, yeah.
Yes. It's Runcorn's Corny McCornface. There is Runcorn's mascot.
Oh, wow.
I've just shown Chris a picture.
Oh, it looks like a pineapple
It looks like a shit inflatable corn, but could be a pineapple.
What's that thing coming out of his head? Why does corn have a little, like, antenna?
I guess this
one does.
Is
that to pick up Radio 4? What's that about?
Maybe it's one of those mussels that you get that's like a big shell and it looks like a big dong coming out the top of it.
Maybe
that's what it is.
Corny McCornface.
Yeah, so it says, it's been a while since Pies paid tribute to a brilliantly naff mascot from non-leagues, so we thought we'd revive the series with an absolute boomer. Introducing the erstwhile symbol of Runcorn Linnets FC, Ron Corn.
Aww.
Otherwise colloquially known as Corny McCornface.
Was that after a public vote of all of Runcorn's fans?
Yeah, they said they had interest from Corn FC, but they went for Runcorn. Said that Corny might actually give the Tunbridge Angel a run for his or her money in the cobbled together 4 metres of wire and old duvet cover stakes. So I think we're quite close to Tunbridge Angel, so I might have to try and figure out who Tunbridge the Angel is, or the Tunbridge Angel.
Yes, yeah.
Because that sounds like a quite equally craptacular
indeed.
Mascot.
Corny McCornface, it does indeed go down in the annals.
Yes.
Or Runcorn. There's Runcorn doesn't show up in in anything.
So our team of the week,
they are Halifax Town, and with a very interesting mixed history, of course. And you have to be very careful, of course, because they're one of these clubs that have reformed under a new name.
Yes.
There's FC Halifax Town now.
I was going to say they are FC Halifax Town.
FC Halifax Town, or as they used to be, Halifax Town AFC. So they had, I think it's fair to say, as so many of the clubs that we discuss and that we know about in non-league, financial difficulties very much nearly weighed lace to them. They had to restart again, 3 divisions down. Had a few seasons on the up, but they're a very interesting club, obviously a big kind of ex-league pedigree.
Yes, they are. They're also a town that obviously supports the teams local, both the local teams, because the rugby team obviously get you know, the stadium is basically for the rugby because it's such a big stadium.
Yes.
But the football, like, they still, I think they said that this season they were looking to get over 1,000 season tickets, which for, you know, National League,
that's really good.
Pretty good.
And it's the Shaman, because they play at the Shay. And I think the stuff, if you've heard about Halifax recently, you've probably heard about the state of their pitch. I believe there was a genuine article in the Mirror, in the Daily Mirror, and it had a picture of the pitch at the Shay, I think from last season. And it was just a sort of barren, desolate wasteland. Yeah. It was just like grey sand everywhere. And there was a question at the bottom saying, like a little poll, and it just said, what's your favourite beach? Copacabana?
Or the Shay.
Or the Shay.
Yeah. Now, do you know where the word Shay comes from?
Oh, no, I don't, no.
It's derived from the Old English word shore, which means a small wood.
Which means Luke Shaw. It does not mean Luke Shaw.
It says the two words are used interchangeably in ancient references to the property upon which the stadium was eventually constructed. Mm. So, small wood, thicket or grove. By the looks of the pictures of the pitch last season, it's grown back again.
I was going to say, it's definitely grown back. There's Shays all over the place.
And I just thought I'd give you a little quiz. The Shay lies on the south side of Halifax, about a quarter mile from the town centre. Four stands of the Shay are the North Stand.
Yes.
The East Stand.
Yes.
The South Stand and the...
Oh, see, I know this one because I was looking at their chat. It's like the Skirkoat stand.
I thought you might say West. Because all the rest of them are South, East, West, and North.
It's not QI and the big klaxon goes off, is it?
Yeah, possibly.
The Skirkoat stand, which is the name
it's
of the
main... oldest stand there as well.
I was reading that they're trying to redevelop it. It's kind of been feeling that they've been redeveloping it over a series of months,
many years,
and decades even.
Yes.
Probably not helped by the fact that I was looking at the fact that they used to have Speedway there. Which I mean, I can, you know, some sports.
What else
and some
are they
going
to have? Like sledding.
They'll have bobsleigh. They'll have
mud wrestling.
They'll probably have the equestrian events there next time. There was a rugby world 2003 rugby international played there as well in the
not bad.
Which is not bad. But yeah, the Speedway.
Is that rugby union or league?
Rugby league. They're not so good one. Sorry, rugby league. Ooh. I think of the rugby league community now.
Well, the rugby league, the team that's the rugby team there is a rugby league team.
Don't write in, people. and the ASF Speedway, and it's called the Halifax Dukes. Because the Duke of Wellington used to be near. And it was his like battalion of something or other. So they're called the Halifax Dukes. And an even better story is that they reformed, and so the Halifax Speedway, Super Speedways, have reformed with a junior club. They had a fixture for the first time this season. I was reading about this fixture. It was all excitement. Going, oh, Halifax have got a Speedway team back again. And it just said, unfortunately, one of the riders couldn't turn up, and one of the opposition riders couldn't turn up either. So it just sounds like, basically, there were supposed to be four people turning up on dirt bikes, and only three turned up. So it just, yeah. So the Halifax Dukes are back in action.
Speaking of Speedway, we are actually in Eastbourne.
Yeah. Our spiritual home.
There is a...
not very spiritual home.
There has been a recent event. Great Britain star Craig Cook has been given a 12-day ban by the Speedway Control Bureau after his role in a brawl with riders and track staff at Eastbourne. His fellow England internationals, Eddie Kennett and Dane Klaus Wissing, English international apparently, who have both been slapped with a 10-day suspension. So they were involved with the brawl as well.
Wow. So it's everywhere.
Intimidating atmosphere. The incident on August 3rd sparked a mass melee on the track with riders, track officials all getting involved.
Brilliant.
With a ban after deemed by the Bureau to have breached Speedway regulations, any act which is violent, threatening, or abusive in nature to official rider or any other person.
Wow. I was just looking at a list of Halifax Dukes famous riders, and there's just some brilliant names. There's Eric Bucock.
Ooh.
Eric Bucock and Dave Younghusband.
Oh, Younghusband's a good name.
What a great name.
Yeah, because there's what's his name? Phil Younghusband. I think he's ex like Chelsea youth player that plays in the Philippines.
Yeah.
The reason I know about him is there was a guy who used to play for Ringmer who, when I was in the under 18s team there, there was two brothers. There was Chris and Simon Greetwich. They moved to the Philippines about 2 years later and they've been playing over there for years.
Mm.
And now I think Simon, I think he's the older one. No, it's Chris, the older one. He's the assistant manager now of the national team.
Mm. That's, the young husbands are everywhere, though.
Yeah. And, and Phil Younghusband played under him for the national team.
So Eric Bukok as well. That's just fantastic.
Bukok.
It's brilliant. So I suppose we'll go on to some of their famous fixtures, and I think possibly one of their most famous results was when they played Manchester City in the FA Cup in 1980. And there's a wonderful article on the Guardian Sport Network about it, about the day, kind of from the Man City perspective in the terms of their fall from grace. They'd spent a load of money.
1980. Itself.
Are you sure? Was it 1980? Malcolm Allison was the manager at the time. It's just an absolutely wonderful read. The third round of the FA Cup, they were drawn away at the Shea to play Halifax. City had been struggling. They lost 4-1 to Brighton the previous weekend. So, you know, it's bad.
Yes.
When stuff like that happens. And in the kind of build up to it, there was a lot of talk around this hypnotist called Ronald Markham.
Oh.
Otherwise known as Romark. which I think is, I don't know if that's Primark got their name.
is he any familial relation to Ron Korn?
Well, he could be. Have a look. He sort of looks like Better Call Saul, but like, I know, that's quite a look,
isn't
it?
That is a comb over.
He's a prop. That's a comb over and a half. Malcolm Allison, when Allison was managing Palace, had a big tiff because Markham was brought in, Romark was brought in to hypnotise the Palace players, get them playing better. But apparently Malcolm Allison didn't pay him. So then he put a curse.
He
put a curse on Allison, which, as I noted when I looked at the Crystal Palace forum, one wag said, lasts to this day. Markham turned up to help the Halifax players because obviously he had a beef with Allison, who was the Man City manager.
Yeah.
And
did he give his services for free this time? Or?
Well, by the sounds of it, yeah. So he says, Romark met the Halifax players on the evening match, apparently hypnotising Paul Hendry and convincing him that he was the best midfielder in the country. Striker John Smith was sceptical about his meeting with Romark, telling the Lancashire Evening Post, "I was trying not to laugh and I'm thinking, what's all this about? What a load of nonsense." the pitch was pretty terrible, which is a given in those days for the 80s cup matches.
Is this last year again? Or?
I'm just getting very confused.
Man City spending loads of money and Halifax's pitch is terrible.
Well, this...
saying this is in the 80s, not now.
Next you'd be saying that there's, you know, dissatisfaction with a Conservative government or something.
there's a female Prime Minister, she just left office.
I know, it snowed all week, and by Thursday the pitch was ankle deep in water and thawing out slowly. The manager, however, got the fire hoses on the pitch and poured hundreds of gallons of extra water on. By kickoff, the pitch was just about playable, but it looked like a soggy peat bog. And so, Halifax ended up winning 2-1. Allison has said before the game, defeat will not be the end of the world, but it will be bloody close to it. So there was chance of Allison out by the City fans afterwards. In terms of what of Romark, he offered to take back his curse, but Allison politely declined taking back.
Did it involve some sort of ritual and like weeing or something?
It's just amazing. And then I looked a little bit more about Romark, and there's this story. He basically said that he'd drive a couple of hundred miles to Ilford blindfolded. He got 200 metres, smashed into a police car and said it was his psychic blind spot. So what a character. But quite rightly, the manager at the end said that all the headlines would be about the hypnotist, but we beat Manchester City through courage, hard work and belief. They lost to Bolton in the next round, but an amazing occasion at the Shea.
Now, one thing that I always like to do when I look at a club or like if a team that I'm following is playing, I like to look at their forum.
Mm-hmm.
See if there's anything weird on there, because they're always...
The old fans forum.
Yeah, and I went back to April the 13th, 2009, on the Halifax forum.
Oh, yes.
And it says, what's the main contributing factor to this season's failure? And it's a poll.
Oh, yes.
It says, what's the main contributing factor to this season's probable failure? Number one, referees.
Mm-hmm.
Got 6.98%. Two...
That's quite high.
Injuries, 20%.
Mm-hmm.
Managerial lack of harmony, 25%. Tactics, 18.6%. Team selection, 0%. And then other police state. And if I scroll down a little bit, they said other. A lack of passion, heart, desire, a misunderstanding of the league, what it takes to win it, i.e. 14 grafters and grinders.
Oh, hello.
This was before the app came out. Prepared to work hard.
You downloaded it the day it came out, so that's, yeah, you would know.
Exactly, yeah, I've got it on my phone. Yeah, timestamped and everything. And, push the referees to the rules to the limit. Too many half-assed performances. Some talented players who appeared to be here for the ride. No stability, no togetherness. Oh, I could go on and on and on. Now, bear in mind, it's 2009. Mm. When were they formed? Reformed?
Yeah,
2008.
That's all gone very well.
Already.
That's all gone terrifically. Yeah. Well, they've kind of raced up the leagues, even though that chap's very disappointed. They sort of raced up the leagues and they got back to the Conference Premier pretty sharpish. After some, but they went, but down to the Conference North again, then back up to the Conference Prem. So the Vanarama, is it still the Vanarama?
The Vanarama National.
The Vanarama Bananarama. I think there was. I did read something whereby they'd had two promotions in a row, and their third season was, you know, a sort of mid to upper table, and apparently there were people very annoyed that they should be chasing a third successive promotion. You just think, well, you know, well, what's the, yeah, you know, come on, guys, you know.
There is a point at which you sort of go,
yeah, fair enough, we're doing all right.
You can, you know, you might have to consolidate for a year.
You consolidate, absolutely.
But, Moody B1.
Oh, Moody B1. Him again.
He didn't even put, like, that his selection was other. He just put, we are complete and utter shite.
Oh, right, yeah.
Always have been, always will be.
What, for all 14 months of their existence?
Yes. And Mr. Vincent, the voice of reason, said, bloody hell, come on, fart, mate. You will end up on North Bridge within an hour at this rate. This season
the Halifax Beachy Head, they call that.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. This season is over now. We are out of our misery. There is always next season. Shame until we die and all that.
I reckon he'd be fun at parties, old Moody B1. Indeed,
the voice of reason.
Well, I think some of their fans occasionally lose their faculties. And there's an example here of they had a streaker. They had a big game against Charlton in the FA Cup live on ITV in 2011, I believe.
2011,
it was.
Yeah. About November, I think.
About November. A streaker raced onto the pitch. This is from the Halifax Courier. A streaker raced onto the pitch at Halifax Town's FA Cup match, has been fined, but has paid a bigger penalty, I'm afraid. He's faced Terry of Ovingdon Green, Ovenden Green, Ovenden. They very handily give their address so that you can go and, like, laugh at him.
You go streak outside his house.
Absolutely. Yeah, see how you like it, old Tez. faced being thrown out by his partner and his dad, a season ticket holder.
Oh.
Sorry, that's a very ungrammatical sentence. He's faced being thrown out by his partner and his dad, who is a season ticket holder, hasn't spoken to him since his naked dash. So he was fined £160 with costs of £85.
Stewarding. He's paid for the stewards.
He's paid for the stewards to maul him to the ground. Prosecutor Vanessa Schofield said FC Halifax was a family-run club and there was 4,100 spectators, including children, at the game. He was naked from the waist down and ran to the halfway line before being tackled by a steward. His lawyer said it's been the most embarrassing month and 3 days of his life and a very traumatic occasion. This was not pre-planned. He's not somebody who makes a habit of going around football matches doing this sort of thing.
Just going to get banned from every ground in the country, just going out whipping out his knob out.
There came a point where this is the crowning sentence. There came a point where the match stopped, and for some reason that he can't remember, he took off his trousers and ran on the pitch. it's caused a family rift, and his father hasn't spoken to him since. One daughter has also heard about her father's escapade at preschool. I don't know how that comes up. I don't know whether, you know, Mrs. Bletchley in you know, just goes, oh, saw your dad at the weekend.
Well, speaking of streakers, I have a post from the forum about this incident, actually. The title is Streaker or Sex Offender. And Francis Firth, he said, I understand the British Streaking Association have put in a complaint about the Shea Streaker on the grounds that simply removing your trousers and waving your invisible genitals does not qualify as a real streak. They suggest the route taken is more akin to flashing and therefore would be it would seem that the Shea semi-nudist has crossed the line into a sex offence arena. Rumours circulating the ground suggest that the chap was Bradders. Can anyone confirm or deny? And Mr. Vincent again.
Oh, yes. Yeah, he's back.
He's back. Yeah. He said, technically a very poor streak. Simply removing your trousers and skids, but keeping on your jumper and parka is not acceptable. The helicopter impression in front of the south stand also lacks rhythm, in my opinion, and needs some work. He should have also had a trim before performing such a manoeuvre. All in all, I give the performance 6 out of 10.
Oh, bless him. Well, you know, he might have forgotten about it, but, you know, 8 years later, he's brought back to, you know, national attention. Probably yes. Not via us, but still. Did you read about, because obviously we haven't mentioned the fact that there's two Halifax players who have reached the Premier League. Yes. One of them is Jamie Vardy.
Yes, Jamie Vardy.
He's having a party.
He's always having a party.
Always having a party.
But and some vodka and some Charlie.
And some, yeah, he's a nice fella. Yeah.
He had Charlie.
Nice guy. But the sort of lesser known one is, have you heard of Jeff Horsfield?
Yes. West Brom, right?
He joined Fulham. So 18 years ago, this was.
Did he play for West Brom?
He possibly did. Yes. Fulham was his first Premier League club. So he left. He left the Halifax in 1998. After Halifax getting scored 30 goals for Halifax, and in short order joined Fulham. He was saying, there's an interview with him in the Halifax Courier again. This is what he says. He says, Jeff Horsfield says, I wish they would make a film about me. My story's more interesting. And he's referring Jamie Vardy. But unfortunately, the rest of the article doesn't really bear out that premise. No. And it's just basically, oh, I got injured and then I didn't do this and didn't do that.
Yeah, I'm just looking on his Wikipedia. He played for Halifax, went to Fulham.
Yeah.
Then Birmingham City, Wigan, and then West Brom. So that's where I remember him.
Indeed.
West Brom.
And Jeff Horsfield.
I think he was one of the mainstays in their Great Escape season, actually.
Ah. That's what, in Fulham's one? Or West Brom's?
West Brom. They were sort of dead and buried. And, yes. They got, I think, Brian Robson in.
Mm.
And they stayed up on the last day of the season.
Indeed. So Halifax, hotbed. Yorkshire hotbed.
Yeah.
Of Premier League talent.
Now, if we're talking about Jamie Vardy.
Oh, yeah.
I have to bring it back to the forum again.
Yeah.
Jamie Vardy's back door.
Oh, here we go, yeah.
It says, after tonight's hat-trick, would you smash Jamie Vardy's back door in? 34% say yes. 10% say no.
Andy Gray got fired from Sky for that sort of talk.
55% said sure. Throw Aaron Hardy and Danny Lowe in too.
there's obviously some repression on the terraces up there, I think. Yeah. What was the answer? What was the winner of the poll?
The winner was sure, throw Aaron Hardy and Danny Lowe into
it. Well, of course.
So you have a foursome.
Terrific.
Lovely. Now, have you heard of Ernest Robert Suter?
No, I haven't.
Born in...
Who he?
Born in Epperston, 10th of July, 1880. Goalkeeper, Halifax Town legend. His debut was against Chesterfield at home, Midland League, in 1913. They drew 0-0. But he was more than just a player to Halifax. He was associated with a club that spent 20 years. Goalkeeper, trainer, coach, groundsman and general handyman. There's no record of him driving the club charabanc. He probably did that too. Then in April 1929, Suter, because it's one T, S-U-T-E-R, not Sutter, because that would be two T's. Added another feather to his cap when he wrote himself into the record books, the oldest Englishman to appear in a Football League match. Injuries to regular first keepers Howard Matthews and Cliff Binns left the selection committee a headache for the home match with South Shields in 1929, with Suter providing a willing hand and donning the keeper's jersey for the first time, first of three team outings that term, despite being in his 49th year.
Wow.
It was all somewhat ironic that Suter should still find himself playing first-class football at such an age after he spent the best part of 6 years in the reserves at Notts County whilst acting as understudy to legendary Albert Ironmonger, who continued to play himself till he was 43 years old.
Well, you're the 40s or the new 20s.
Exactly.
That's the way forward. Did you... we certainly got to touch on the fact that Halifax went to Wembley for the first time in their history in 2016 and won the FA Trophy off Grimsby Town, who had previously, the previous
Grimsby
week...
Grimsby Town.
It's Grim up Grimsby. The previous week they'd won the playoff, so they'd got promoted to the Football League. And so then a kind of shadow of the team seemed to visit Wembley on the second occasion. There's an article from Cod Almighty.
I know, I'm guessing that's their forum.
That's their fanzine. It's the Grimsby Town fanzine, Cod Almighty. It's a report on the game. I think it's just a man losing his mind. It just ends with how should we record the end of our dark days? This is after I got promotion. Yes. How should we record the end of our dark days? Grandstanding, grandiloquent, sentimental soppery, like our retreat from Wembley, let it be a dignified silence. Remember, when in the Bananarama, no one can hear you scream. Oh. So they also use our Bananarama nomenclature.
Yes. I think they should just rename it.
I think they should. Just the Bananarama.
Just like kidnap Bananarama.
They're still going on Radio 2.
And just sort of like ferry them around to all the different grounds and they have to force them to perform at half time.
I really do think that is the answer.
Exactly. Well, how else would they get them to do it?
Indeed. Well, another thing to touch on is we've mentioned their victory over Manchester City. What about their victory over Manchester United?
Oh.
Yes. They beat Manchester United, also at the Shea. I had to read it up because I looked for the tournament that they beat them in, and it's called the Watney Cup. Have you heard of the Watney Cup?
Is that sort of like a northern just cup, or is it like the league predecessor? I feel like how
we didn't know about this. It's just an amazing thing. It was a pre-season competition between the two highest scorers from the top four divisions. And so you had eight. It was a straight knockout tournament. It ran for 4 years between 1970 and 1973.
Yes.
And you had the top two teams from each division going in. And so in the first year, the two Division One teams got to the final and won. Like Derby, I think, won it 1 year and so on. But there's been shocks throughout it. And so, yeah, Halifax, in the second year of it, in 1971... George Best, Dennis Law and Bobby Charlton all went to the Shea.
Wow.
In the Watney Cup. They'd been crowned European champions just three years earlier. There was 19,965 there to watch it. The Match of the Day cameras were there, so it was a big thing. But Barry Davis was commentating, him who does all the...
Yeah, Barry Davis.
He does gymnastics now, doesn't he?
And all that.
They won 2-1. But they lost in the next round to West Brom, I believe. How the mighty have fallen. and Manchester United, despite entering it in the first, they it was for teams who didn't qualify for Europe and who weren't in the Charity Shield. Manchester United entered it the first 2 years because they were always top scorers, even though they came like eighth. Because they lost to Halifax, they decided not to enter the following year, even though they're eligible.
Oh, shame.
Because they got pissy. So, yeah, I mean, what more can you ask for? 1971 beating Manchester United, 1980 beating Manchester City.
Not too bad, is it?
And like I said, Dennis Law, George Best, Bobby Charlton all played. And I actually really enjoyed reading
it. Though, going to that game and there's all those players playing, you're basically just going to watch them play.
You are, absolutely. And 19,000 of them.
The town that you're from and the team that you've probably been to watch at least, a few times at least, they go and beat them. It's ridiculous.
Amazing. There was a comment from an historian who said that United weren't the first that they once were, but they still had all the famous players, including George Best, perhaps the most famous name in world football. So humbled, and then didn't enter the following season because they.
Do
had
you reckon
a,
that was at the peak of George Best's lifestyle?
possibly not.
It was pre-season as well.
Yeah, he could have been.
He's
well
probably on the sauce.
He could have been on the. He could have been on the on everything. The ketchup, the barbecue, and everything.
And the sugar.
And so, just another thing on the FA Cup front. Halifax played Spurs back in 1953, I believe it was, way back in the day. But it was the highest attendance seen at the club, so 36,885.
Wow.
Which, having seen pictures of the Shea.
Basically some flat ground. Yeah, just you think a million people.
That's a health and safety nightmare, and that's just not happen. Arthur Rowe, the Tottenham manager, was quoted in the press saying, "We will treat Halifax as if they are league champions," which is an interesting approach. The match was apparently in doubt, but they used blue dye for the pitch markings because there was so much snow. But it went ahead. They were a much hardier bunch, back in the day, weren't they?
Well, they do use. Was it? It was Tottenham, wasn't it, against Man City 2 years ago when the pitch was quite frozen at Wembley, and they shuffled some snow off, and it kind of warmed up, but they'd already painted the lines blue in case of extra snow, and then they played the game. I remember it because it was on TV, and and the lines were still blue, but the pitch was like just green. You could hardly see the lines.
You're just like, where's I can't see it at all. Robbie Fowler would have struggled to do his infamous, little celebration, goal celebration on those lines.
Blue sniff.
Absolutely. I think that's. Have you got anything else on Halifax, Gareth?
Well, I've never been a history buff, but I do like.
There's the understatement of the century.
But I've always kind of liked the stories that you get from clubs forming.
Mm-hmm.
And just a little thing here. It says a letter to the Halifax Evening Courier, signed by Old Sport. drew the attention of a group of city fathers. The letter, published on 20th of April 1911, suggested that setting up a football club in the area dominated by both rugby codes. The Saddle Hotel became the scene of an assembly on the 23rd of May 1911, during which Old Sport revealed his true identity as Mr. A.E. Jones. He declined an official role in the club, and so the pioneers behind the club's first years became Dr. A.H. Muir and Joe McClelland. Respective president and club secretary, Halifax Town played its first played at Sandhall, a patch of land taken over from munitions factory, quite close to Thrum Hall. Although it was only used for a few years, the ground was turned into quite a reasonable venue. After the First World War, hostilities had ended. Halifax Town were reformed in June 1919. The directors managed to secure a lease at Exley Ground, the former home of Salter Bay Rugby Club. Due to its lack of facilities, though, it was always considered a temporary home. Found their present home, the Shea, in 1921, on a site of a former council rubbish dump.
Mm.
The ground's name given to their, as their nickname, the Shaman. And they adopted their blue and white colours because both the other rugby teams in the town had the same colours.
Mm-hmm. Their kit's quite snazzy. So have you seen their kit this year as well?
Yes. I quite like it. They said, in a desire to emulate success, the striped format may have been influenced by neighbours Huddersfield Town.
Mm.
So they were trying to sort of get some sort of juju magic.
Well, of course, and there was discussion on the forums about their closest rivals. But they're unfortunately... A lot of the so-called closest rivals of people they haven't met for decades.
Yes.
People like Huddersfield and Barnsley and all the Yorkshire crew. They said that when they slipped back down the league, Guiseley became a bit of a ding-dong
team. I think you do have to update, especially in non-league, where it's so up
fluid.
And down.
It's very fluid.
Yeah, there's so many leagues you can go through. You could not play a team for 15 years.
Absolutely.
It's not really a rivalry when you haven't... You know, you could have a whole generation of fans that have not seen them. You know, you could have a kid that's, say, like 12, and their first game is the season after they've stopped playing their local rivals. Say 15 years go past, they're, what, 27?
Yeah.
And they've never seen them play their biggest rivals. So you kind of do have to update who your rivals are.
It's very important. I'd absolutely agree. And, I think with a team that reform, it's always difficult because we're almost talking about it as one entity. I mean, technically, they're two entities, but for the purposes of this, I think most of given as well that there wasn't really a break. There was not a season where they didn't play.
There was
just one into the other, and obviously they dropped a few divisions. But I think
you do have to keep them as one sort of one go because they will sort of inherit all of the previous thing. It's just
the stadium,
the financial aspect of it. It's not necessarily that they've like decided to quit playing and.
Well, I was
a couple of years later, someone's decided, actually, now we kind of want a football team.
Well, I was reading it was sort of, you know, there was, people thought it was $500,000 that they owed in the 2000, when it went wrong in 2008, and it actually turned out to be something like £800,000. And you just think that's, for a club at the standard that they're at, it's just a huge amount of money. and you can see, you know, that wasn't the best time for clubs in general with the start of the new recession and whatnot.
Exactly.
So. I've enjoyed it. Should we do one takeaway each? One thing we're going to remember from Halifax. I think for me, I just really enjoyed reading about the Watney Cup. To be honest with you, I was reading all the match programmes.
That is quite a good one because I'd never heard of it before,
but it had big name teams in it, and it was a pre-season match, and it's sort of the precursor to some of these big tours that some of the big clubs go on.
But
Halifax. So you have a go Abu Dhabi. Halifax,
same thing, isn't it?
What's the thing you'll remember from Halifax?
I just think the highlights of their forum. It's quite an active one because obviously I went back, you know, almost 10 years in some cases for different stories on it. But even the recent thing, like it's very active.
Yeah,
and because some clubs you look at, it's like
deaded.
The last post was 3-4 weeks ago or even months ago. Mm. But theirs is, you know. Hours ago is the last post, so I just think in terms of like just the fact that the club is well run now.
And seems to be on a sound footing.
Seems to be on
a has a chance footing. Of chance of promotion.
They get a lot of people at their games. Like
they
I said about the how many season tickets they're going to get,
absolutely,
or they have sold this year. So I just think they're well run, really, just well done.
Excellent. And so that's the Shaman. So we very much enjoyed learning and reading and discussing the Shaman.
So we finished talking about the Shaman, Halifax Town, and I think what we're going to do for the whole series now until the end of the season, we're just going to pick a team every week. Someone that maybe we've either gone to watch or just someone we've never seen.
Absolutely, some vague interest.
Or we've never heard of. Mm-hmm. We're going to go for Weymouth, I think, this week.
Yeah.
We both like the sound of them. Probably go for them.
Yeah, and the only thing I remember is the 8-5 with Lewis, which has gone out of folklore when I was supporting Lewis. So I look forward to doing some more research about them.
Yeah. We have come to the end of the podcast, and what we're going to do is just do a little plug for different bits and pieces. Now, because this is a brand new podcast, we have a new way to contact us. So you can contact us at semipropod@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. If you want to suggest a team for the team of the week, or you just want to say how you found the podcast, or give us a story about the club if you're a Weymouth fan.
Or you're a rugby fan from Halifax and you're pissed off.
Or you're a rugby fan and you don't like that we said...
That we did a West Country accent for a Yorkshire one.
We got Weymouth next.
That's more like it, yeah.
Now, you can find us on Apple Podcasts. Just type in Semi-Pro Football Podcast. You can actually find us on Spotify. Semi-Pro Football Podcast.
Even I have Spotify, and I don't know anything about tech.
And or any other decent podcast provider. I found us on my one, and I use a kind of vague one. Although I think it's quite popular now. It's Pocket Casts on Android. I have an iPad, but I don't have an iPhone, and that's where I found us. Now, if you want to follow us on Twitter,
on the Twittles,
we are at SemiProFootPod.
SemiProFoot. That you do realize that is four words that are all half words.
Yeah.
Semi pro foot pod.
I thought it'd be quite good.
I love it. It's like four non words into one.
Exactly.
Semi pro foot pod.
Yeah. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, it's at Gareth Lewis. And if you want to follow him,
Chris J Mason 12.
Chris J Mason 12.
And so to end our trip down Halifax Way,
The Shaman Way.
We're going to raise our drinks, we're going to chink our glasses. They're plastic. We'll get glass for next time. To the Shaman.
To the Shaman.